Happy Friday. Hope you're having a great 4th of July weekend. The third live Ivy Nation Sports Talk show of the day. It's been a busy day today. Along with Vince D'Addario, I'm Sean Stiers. How are you today, Vince?
I'm great. Third show of the day, second for me. So not back to back to back for me, which is good, which yeah. is, you know,
little I'm gap happy in
about
between, that.
Yes, right? Little gap. Not upset about the gap. That's for sure. But we'll be back into no gap land next week, but which is cool. I mean, it's summertime. So what I do, but
no gap land,
no gap land, which is, hey, it's all good. It's all good. Absolutely. How are you doing? What's your day been like?
I'm doing good. This is the good old 3 out of 4 day holiday weekend, you know, like
true
little odd. It's kind of like Thanksgiving this year, having the 4th on a Thursday, you know,
it's a good point.
It's almost like we're doing a Black Friday show or something in July.
It's very weird. The days of the week get all muddied together in the summertime for me, and having nothing to do yesterday really messed it up for me.
Yeah.
You know, it felt more like a Sunday, maybe.
I know. Well, I just kept sitting around like feeling like Saturday.
Yeah.
But then you've got to go to work on Sunday or something, you know.
It was
very
strange. And then we're adding a show tomorrow. So is it really going to be like that? You know, it's the whole thing's all mucked up.
I watched a lot of movies yesterday is what I did. I watched Independence Day from start, like the entire thing, you know, non-network. First time I've watched the whole thing and I don't know how long. So I did that.
Okay.
Then we went out to eat, came back. We watched 16 Candles last
Whoa.
Night.
Okay.
All the way through.
Interesting.
We're kind of on this Breakfast Club, but Brat Pack kind of thing after the Brat Pack documentary. I don't know if you heard about that came out on Hulu a couple weeks ago.
I did not. The Brat Pack is just a little before my time.
Yeah.
And so I never really got into those movies
specifically.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
You know, yeah. Never really did it for me, to be honest with you.
So we did that, and then when 16 Candles was over, Anchorman was
over. Oh, wow. Talk about different feel.
Probably watched about 75% of Anchorman. And then when that was over, wife went to bed, and I started watching the 1995 movie called Heat. Have you ever seen Heat?
What's it about? Maybe.
It's a bank robbery movie. It's got De Niro, Pacino, Val Kilmer, John Voight. It's got a ton of people. Ashley Judd was in
it. Big fan.
Yeah.
And she was in her prime in 95.
Yep. Yep. The guy that was in Forrest Friend. What's his name? It's escaping me. Bubba Gump. Or Bubba. Bubba.
Like his. Okay. Gotcha.
The guy Bubba, his buddy in Vietnam who died. He was in it. Ton of people. Serrano from Major League.
Wow.
Can't think of his real name off the top of it, but he played the president in one of those TV shows a while back. He was in it. So star-studded cast.
No kidding.
And it's actually a very long movie. So I started it last night. I'm going to finish it tonight.
Oh,
so,
very good.
I had never seen it before, but I've heard a lot of people talking about how good it is. I think it's pretty good, but it hasn't really lived up to some of the hype that I've heard. So
if it hasn't lived up to the hype in the first half, that's not great.
Still good.
That's what keeps you engaged.
Yes.
So I watched 3 movies yesterday,
really?
Actually.
Okay.
And it was kind of spawned into by my kids, believe it or not, mostly my oldest, because I picked Back to the Future to watch.
I think yesterday was the anniversary, wasn't it?
Yes. And so all 3 are on Netflix. And I turned it on just while I was out on the grill. I took the laptop out. I didn't really want to, you know, abandon the grill. So I got the laptop. I just started playing the movie and I'm, you know, flipping the burgers and doing the dogs and the brats and the whole thing. And then we went back inside and I transferred it basically to the television. And then we sat down and we watched all 3. We watched the trilogy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Third one, from what I remember, not nearly as that's where they go Wild Wild West and all that stuff.
I like the third one.
Do you?
Yeah, no, I do. I like all 3
Probably seen
for
it
various
once.
Reasons. Really?
Yeah. Oh, I just didn't think it was that great compared to the other ones.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm a big fan of the whole trilogy, all three. Big fan.
I could be convinced maybe if I go back and watch it again. It's been a long time, but
it does help to watch them in succession. You know what I mean? And I believe two and three, they were made like back to back, like no break in between or anything like that. And so there's a lot of callback from three to two, and then, you know, setting the scene from two to three, you know, with the gun fighting and all this stuff, different stuff. So I do like all three, and it helped to watch all three in a row. Like, didn't have to explain anything to anybody, which was good because they were following along. It was good. It was a nice use of the time.
Okay. All right. Well, this is the We In, We Out show. So, of course, with We In, We Outs, everything, all the questions have to be submitted via the Champions Lounge at Irish Breakdown.
Got to be a member.
Champions Lounge. That's right. You got to be a member to submit the questions. And we've got a lot of them today, a lot of good ones. So let's just jump right into it.
I've only done this, I think, one time, so I'm kind of excited about this.
Okay.
Here we go.
I didn't remember you doing one before, but maybe you did do one of the
maybe I haven't.
First ones. I don't know.
I think we kind of test drove the concept. I don't know that I've ever done it where you've actually brought up the Champions Lounge and done this whole thing, but I feel like we test drove the concept, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right. I don't know.
I don't either. Let's do this.
All right. So first one, Notre Dame will have at least one wide receiver earn at least third team All-American honors from at least three of the five official All-American lists. Are we in or are we out on that? And before you give your answer, Associated Press, American Football Coaches Association, Football Writers Association of America, The Sporting News, and the Walter Camp Foundation are the five official All-American ballots. So one Notre Dame receiver will get at least third team honors from at least three of the five.
The problem is Notre Dame is not exactly known for their wide receiver play. And I don't know that there is a guy that's going to be head and shoulders above everybody else to acquire the stats necessary. There's going to be plenty of guys on other teams that are going to rack up stats, and that is what gets you on these All-America lists offensively. And again, Notre Dame's not known for wide receivers, so Notre Dame will get the benefit of the doubt for tight ends, offensive line, you know, things of that nature, but not wide receiver. So I'm going to be out on this.
I am hesitantly out. I think they've got a chance because you've got guys like, are we counting Jaden Harrison only as a kickoff returner? Like if he gets kickoff, even though he's a wide receiver, if he gets kickoff return All-American honors?
He has to be a wide receiver.
Okay.
Like you have to get it for being a wide receiver.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because he's already gotten it for being a kick return guy. Yeah.
And then Chris Mitchell at least has a reputation that'll follow him from Florida International. But I've got to be out as well because I think it's going to be so spread out and because it does tend to be like a lot of these awards tend to be reputation based. You have to have like what you did last year tends to generate a lot of carryover going into the next year. So they
definitely don't have that going on.
Right. So I've got to be out on it as well.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We in and we out. It's totally fine to put ketchup on your hot dog on a 4th of July barbecue, or any barbecue for that matter. Where are you on ketchup? Very controversial take, and I know that we're going to offend some people because, you know, most people are very diehard one way or the other on this whole ketchup thing.
Here's the thing. Are we asking, am I personally in or out, or is it okay for anybody to do it? I need some clarification here. What are we, like, personally, I don't put anything on my hot dogs.
Really? At all.
Yeah. Yep.
Didn't you used to do like an onion thing?
Yeah, maybe some crust, you know, some chopped onion, maybe a little bit, or I have been known to throw a little cheese on there, a little sprinkled cheese on the top.
Yeah.
But I don't do ketchup, so I would be out personally, but I wouldn't even bat an eye if I saw somebody else do it.
Okay. See, some people feel like DJ putting ketchup on anything.
Yeah.
Hard pass on that. I like a little mustard, a little ketchup on my hot dog. You know, like a little sour and sweet, or whatever you would call that, like salty and sweet kind of thing. And I definitely like, you know, ketchup with my French fries and on my burger. Mm. So
interesting. Now, yeah. Do you go all in on like the Chicago dog, like with all the fixins?
I've done that before, but I haven't had a Chicago dog in a long time. I'm like you, actually. Like I actually like a little cheese sauce on my dog.
It's like a nacho cheese sauce kind of a deal. I could get on board with that. Not a lot, but enough for some flavor.
And if jalapenos are available, ooh, I like the ketchup mustard jalapeno.
Dog.
Yeah. Okay. I would rather do jalapenos than the Chicago dog style with everything.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Salty says, Chicago dog's veritable salad on them.
Yes.
You get tomatoes and the peppers and
it's
all different kinds.
Way too much.
Yeah.
It's way too much. I cannot get on board with that at all.
Okay, so played like a champion. I was about to say today, but played like a champion has a slew of questions.
Okay,
so we're
going
to have to kind of go through these one by one. Some good ones, though, here. So the first one, Notre Dame's combination of young and inexperienced offensive line gave up six pressures, or will give up six pressures or less week one against an elite defensive line and stellar defensive mind in Elko. So six pressures or less Notre Dame will give up against Texas A&M.
Pressures are so subjective.
Yeah,
that's the problem. You know, are we going by what Pro Football Focus says? Are we going by what, you know, Brian says when he goes and cuts up the film? You know what I mean? Like, it's very subjective as far as what an actual pressure is. And so that's part of the problem for me. And I don't know, I guess, what a good game of team pressures would be. My instinct is to say I'm out. I think they'll probably get a few more than that. I don't. Like, if you were going to give me, like, some sack totals or something like that, I would be much more convicted in my answer, because I don't think that they're going to be able to get to Riley Leonard and bring him down to the ground. But I do think they might flush him out of the pocket a couple of times, and they may get into his wheelhouse a few times. But so I'll sell it, because I think they could go over the number of six just based on what people believe a pressure actually is.
I'm going to buy it because I think that Leonard's mobility is it's going to help quite a bit in this, but you know, because he's got escapability that a pocket quarterback doesn't have. So you're going to avoid some pressures in those circumstances. So, you know, even if maybe guys get through, if he flushes out and he takes off and runs, then there's no pressure. No, it's not.
It's not. So when they push him out, like when he leaves the pocket because there's pressure on him, that's not a pressure? Like I don't know. Genuinely asking.
Does Brian score that as a pressure?
I don't know. I honestly don't know what his criteria is.
I thought a pressure was essentially you're forced to throw and it either results in an incompletion or an interception.
If we're going by your definition, then it's going to be way under six, like way under six. If a pressure is just forcing the quarterback to just be off of his mark and move away from the pocket, I think it could be over. I don't think that's a pressure.
Like the year, for example, remember the season when I sat in the booth and helped with the official stats? That's kind of how it was explained to me. That's when you credit a pressure, the two things that I just said, basically. Like if a defensive guy, you know, forces the quarterback either into an incompletion or an interception.
Okay.
So, because, you know,
then it's going to be way under. I'll buy it then. If that's the definition, I will absolutely buy that. Because he's not going to be forced to throw an interception or an incompletion or anything like that based on the D-line. I don't think that's happening.
Right.
So
now, you know, if it's like, again, like, you know, you come at him and the quarterback gets out of the pocket and he takes off and runs. I mean, if it results in a positive play, I don't think you can credit a pressure.
That's fair. I think he will allow that to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I do think his mobility will help them. And then, okay, yeah, he'll get away from some of those pressures. So, yeah, I like that.
Right. Okay, next one. Joe Alt was an elite pass protector before Joe Rudolph came to coach at Notre Dame. Taking Alt out of the equation, Notre Dame's offensive line pass protection grade as a unit was a C-plus or better last season. And he says, please substantiate your grade because I would have given Spindler and Coogan D grades in the center a C-minus. At best. So what say you on this one, Vince D'Addario?
Wow. Well, Rocco was there before Rudolph. And I mean, every one of these offensive linemen. So like the premise I don't like because every one of these offensive linemen was here prior to Rudolph. So if you're taking Joe Alt out of the equation, then you see what I'm saying? So he comes out of the equation because he wasn't coached by Rudolph before, but all these other guys who weren't also coached by Rudolph before, they are part of the equation. Like, I have a hard time with that part of it, unless I'm reading it wrong. But
I think he's basically just saying Joe Alt was elite. Maybe he's kind of intertwining some things that maybe, you know, aren't connected, but I think he's saying Joe Alt was elite. So if you take Joe Alt out, how good really was the rest of the offensive line?
Fisher? You didn't even mention Fisher.
Yeah, I know. I'll just say this. They allowed 16 sacks all of last season, right, which is about 1.2 per game. They ranked 19th in the nation. It's not all because of Joe Alt. Agreed. Joe Alt. So even if you take Joe Alt out and they rank 19th in the nation, which would be at least an A plus. So if you take Alt out, I think at worst, the rest of the unit is a B-. So I've got to be out on this.
I love the stat. Thank you for that. Because there's actually some factoid behind my
when he said,
process.
Please substantiate your grade. Asked what my day was like. I scrolled through and looked at some of these. So smart. I definitely found a stat I could fall back on with this one.
Yeah.
I think that there's just concern, obviously, because you're taking out one, the very best lineman that they had. Sure. And then, as you said, Blake Fisher was the second best lineman that they had. You take those guys out. Right. So I think he's concerned about the offensive line, especially going into that Texas A&M game, which I get because, again, you lost two really good guys, a first-round guy and a second-round guy. But I think they'll be okay. I really do.
How many, since you're the stat guy, and I don't know how fast you can find this, but
there's something else. We're going to go to, right? Going to go back to pressures now.
No, how many sacks did Notre Dame give up in the bowl game? Do you have that information? Like,
I don't know. I don't have it right here, but it's something that I can find.
Yeah, why don't you find that for a second? Because I don't believe they gave up very many.
I don't think they did either.
That was the starting lineup that I anticipate being the starting lineup going into Texas A&M. And so we do have some empirical evidence of this five working together. And so, and Steve Angeli is not Riley Leonard when it comes to mobility either. So
they gave up two sacks.
Two sacks against the entire Oregon game. State. Yeah. Okay. With the starting defensive line that was actually pretty good for Oregon State being intact in the bowl game, correct? So that is something that is important. So I don't think that this is going to be the problem that people anticipate that it's going to be. I'll just put it that way. Because you've got new guys, you've got some movement, you've got some really talented guys that maybe haven't proven themselves yet, and that's fine. But I think overall, I am not that worried about this offensive line. Now, I realize the question was more about last year than it is this year, but I feel like they were in the B category for pass protection. I really do. Now, there were some whiffs, and as Ryan said, look, there were – Fisher was the worst at pass blocking. Like, that's – he was not good at it. And being at right tackle, I think there's going to be an upgrade at pass blocking over on the right side, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, run blocking is a different conversation, but I think they're going to be better as far as pass blocking is concerned. So I think I'm more on board with what the offensive line is going to do next year than a lot of people are.
Yeah, because I'm looking back at the question. He gave Coogan a D, the center, a C- at best. And again, you're probably going to be replacing both of those. If things work out the way we think, you're going to have Spindler starting at one guard, Kramer starting at the other guard, and you're going to have Shrouth.
Yeah, Billy.
He wrote just the size and everything. He reminds me a little bit of Kramer, but Tommy Kramer, obviously.
But Ashton Craig is going to start at center, just like you're saying.
Right.
And Ashton Craig literally forced Zeke Correll to go play for a different team.
Exactly.
It is an upgrade at center. And when he was in there in the last three games of the season or four, whatever it was, it's an upgrade.
But he's still saying, you know, grade last year. But again, like, they only gave up 16 sacks, and it's not all just because of Joe Alt. So I can't give him a horrible grade. So like I said, B- is what I would give them.
Me too.
The rest of the unit, because they were still among the elite when it came to, you know, the low number of sacks. And they didn't give up a ton of pressures either. Cause like we were just, you know, the first question was about the pressures. 37 opponent pressures last year and 16 sacks. So 37 pressures is not quite 3 per game. So they didn't even give up a whole lot of pressures last year. And that was with a less mobile quarterback than what they're going to have this year. So there you go. Okay. So he says it's reasonable for a fan to believe, as I do, that Texas A&M has at least a 50% chance to beat Notre Dame due to home field advantage, their quarterback being way better than anyone realizes, and the ability of A&M's defensive line to potentially dominate our offensive line week one. When was the last season Notre Dame's offensive line looked good week one against a defensive unit with above average talent, and the positive overall vibes in the program with Elko and the excellent coaches he's hired? Very concerned about Elko,
and very concerned about the offensive line, which I feel like we just kind of
put. Is this possible? Sure, it's possible.
Anything's possible.
But like if we take them one at a time, home field advantage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
College football 25. So, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
They're gonna have home field.
Yep.
advantage. Their quarterback being way better than anyone realizes.
That I got a big time pushback on that one.
I think he's going to be good. But again, like when you look at the quarterback matchup, I would take Riley Leonard 100 times out of 100 over Connor Weakman. He's going to be good, but I don't think he's going to be way better than anyone realizes.
Oh, gosh, no. No. And, you know, again, it's one pass, but good Lord, he looked bad in the finals at the Manning camp, so I'll just say that.
Yeah.
I don't see that being the case. Way better than anyone realizes. People think that Texas A&M is favored against Notre Dame, so I think people think he's going to be really good, and I think it's going to be the opposite of that. I think he's not going to be as good as people think that he's going to be. So,
yeah.
And on top of that, he's going to be going up against one of the best defenses in the country. So that's part of it too. So that part I am not worried about. Now, the last one, the ability, the defensive line, blah, 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 blah. Hard pass on that one. I mean, yeah, the offensive line will be playing together. Not for the first time, by the way, because they played together in the bowl game. So, and they'll have all of spring and they'll have all of fall camp and everything else. And so they're not going to be overwhelmed by A&M's defensive line.
Yeah.
I do not see that being the case.
There's talent on that defensive line, and I think it's going to be good. But like when you look at the production those guys return, I mean, it's like they're no, like, you know, if we're doing scales, I would put it pretty even with Notre Dame's offensive line, actually. Yeah.
People tend to forget that
they had stars coming in, but none of them have actually done anything yet at the college level, with the exception of the Purdue transfer that they got, the defensive end.
Notre Dame's offensive line has had some pretty good star rankings coming in, too. And I think people tend to forget that as well. Like these kids were pretty highly recruited coming out of high school. So, you know, I get all of those things. And like DJ says, Elko is the only concern because he knows how to get into Leonard's head. That QB doesn't scare anyone. Getting to his head, like I think you're giving a coach a little bit too much credit to be able to get into somebody's head. Like Riley Leonard's a seasoned starter. He's done this for a long time. I don't think the coach is going to get into his head, so to speak. Because last time I checked, Mike Elko's a good defensive coordinator. I think Mike Denbrock's a better offensive coordinator than Mike Elko is a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And that's who Riley Leonard's got on his side. So if the defensive line is overwhelming the offensive line for Notre Dame, Mike Denbrock's going to have an answer to that. Get the ball to the outside.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they'll have some wins. They'll win some plays. It's, you know, it's not going to look perfect, but I think that Notre Dame's offensive line is more than going to be able to hold their own in that game. I don't think they're going to get dominated by any means.
Yeah. I'm good. I don't have any worries about that. And coaches have gone against former players a million different times. And how often does it, you know, how often are they getting in their heads? Like, I think that's a way overplayed aspect of this. Way overplayed.
Yeah. He knows his strengths and weaknesses. He knows Riley, you know, Elko knows Riley Leonard's strengths and weaknesses, but he still has to be able to catch his guys still have to be able to make plays. They have to, you know, look, that's what it's going to come down to.
Mike Elko is going to try to keep Riley Leonard in the pocket, and he's going to try to make him force him to be a thrower. Right. I think we can all anticipate that that's going to be the case. You can try to do a lot of things. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. Number one. And if he forces Riley Leonard to be a thrower, I'm actually okay with that too. I believe he just proved he could be an accurate thrower of the football. So again, I don't think people give him enough credit for the accuracy that he throws with either. So maybe Riley Leonard's going to get into Mike Elko's head. Anybody ever think about that?
Hey,
how about that?
How about that? All right. Oscar Madison says, good questions though. Played like a champion. I know you're a little, maybe a little bit on the dark side, but still some good questions. A little bit worried.
I mean, very worried, man. Everybody needs to take a breath.
So Oscar Madison says there will be at least two true freshmen in the starting lineup or rotation for USC. In or out on that?
in the rotation, well, the third running back is probably going to be a true freshman. So I guess that would be one. And that'll be at the beginning of the year. So the odds of there being one more, I think, are pretty good. So
yeah, whether it's like Micah Gilbert or
Ryan Young,
you know, one of the cornerbacks, you know, defensive. Yeah. Like, I'll say, yeah, I'm in on that.
Yeah. I'm in on it. I think there's a pretty good chance.
Yeah. KVA on defense, Kingston Viliamu.
Yeah. I mean, and he said in the rotation, like Bryce Young could be in the rotation at defensive line. KVA will be in the rotation at linebacker. Like, in the rotation isn't really that big of a deal. And I think there's going to be, I would even alter this question to say there'll be at least two true freshmen in the rotation at Texas A&M, and I would still be in on it.
Interesting. If that happens, then Marcus Freeman's philosophy has definitely shifted since 2 years ago at Ohio State.
They won't start, but they'll be in the rotation.
Yeah.
You won't be able to keep Bryce Young off the field.
Okay, speaking of Kingston Viliamu, Asa, he'll be the starting Mike linebacker by late October. You in or out on that?
I am so far out that I can't even see the question. Like that, everybody is just completely forgetting about Drake Bowen.
I know.
And thinks that he is just some bum off the street.
I know.
Like, that is just going to get bypassed.
He's already getting, you know, like the J.D. Bertrand treatment, and he hasn't even started a game yet.
Unbelievable. Like, everybody was super excited this time last year for Drake Bowen, and now he's yesterday's trash.
I know.
Like,
this is a big out for me.
Man.
Kingston's going to be in the rotation.
Correct. You
know? But I don't think he's going to replace Drake Bowen by the middle or by late October.
No, unless there's an injury.
Yeah.
And I don't answer any of these questions based on if there's an injury, because you can't do that, right?
We're going man for man, you know, just assuming everyone's 100% or, you know, everyone's healthy. So,
There's just like next year, I think they'll be playing next to each other, but I don't think that they're going to be, it's not going to be one or the other.
Next one, CJ Carr will be the backup by the end of the season. Seems like every show we're getting CJ Carr questions now as we get closer to training camp.
I understand it, because we all witness the same thing, right? I mean, the kid's good. He processes things faster than anybody else on the roster. And I'm going to go with my heart on this, and I'm going to say that I'm in on it. And I still think he should be the backup at the beginning of the season, but it says by season's end. The problem is, if he's not the backup at the beginning of the season, they're not going to change it, at least not on paper. They're never going to send us like, oh my gosh, it's the Navy game, and all of a sudden CJ Carr is second string on paper. Like, we'll never see it. The only chance we have of seeing a change in the depth chart at quarterback, like naturally, not barring injury, naturally, is maybe going into the playoff or the bowl game or something like that. Maybe you see a jockeying at that point, because there's a little bit more time there. But the depth chart doesn't usually change a whole lot on paper from week one until the end of the season.
Right. I'm just going to say I am out, because I think the only two ways that it happens are kind of what you're saying, either an injury occurs or whatever bowl game type thing. I think that's the only way that he ends up in that spot. Now, does that mean that I don't, you know, do I think he should be? Again, just based on the limited amount of live reps that we've seen, he's definitely shown himself already to be a guy who at the very least was pushing to be in that situation. But he was still the number four quarterback at the end of the spring. So
crazy.
Yep. So I'm out on that.
I mean, technically, Steve Angeli was the starter coming out of spring. True. Technically.
Are we in or are we out on having a succession plan instead of a national coaching search, inspired by Utah's recent announcement that their defensive coordinator will succeed Cal Whittingham when he retires. So do you like succession planning?
Like just in general. So not specifically at Notre Dame, I think is the question, right?
Yeah.
I think every situation is different. I try to look at it from an athletic director's perspective and point of view. If a guy has been around long enough and has earned the right to kind of name his successor in conjunction with me as the athletic director, then yeah, that's fine. But there also has to be an end date to that. Like, I wouldn't do it for more than like 2 years. Like, if you're coming to me and you're telling me you want to name your successor, then you better be out of here in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, but this day and age, we can't sit on a succession plan for like 5 or 6 years. Like, that doesn't work. You know what I mean? Like that I'd be so far out on that. But again, the head coach has to earn that right. First of all, like if Marcus Freeman walked into Pete Bavakwa's office and like, I'd like to name my successor at Notre Dame, I'd be like, you can just turn around and walk right back out, dog. Right. Like, we're not doing that.
Well, yeah. You know, one, you're in year three, you know, like right,
that's what I'm saying.
A little bit of, yeah, a little card ahead of. I mean, it worked out at, I think the best example of it working out is Purdue basketball. Because remember,
that's true.
Matt Painter started off as the coach in waiting behind Gene Katie,
right,
for a year, maybe even two. You know, because he was a head coach, I believe, previously. They brought him in. It's worked out really well there. I'd say so far, it's worked out pretty, for the most part, okay with John Shire after Krzyzewski's retirement at Duke. So I just, you obviously have to have a really good feel for who it is. And I think as an athletic director, you have to trust what input you're getting from the current head coach. But True. At the same time, I don't know, with very few, maybe Krzyzewski would be, you know, like one of the few who you would give, you know, a full boat of autonomy to make that kind of decision, just because you're talking about a Hall of Famer and, you know, whatever. Like, how much input do you want to give the guy who's leaving, when you're ultimately the athletic director who has to make that final call?
It would have to be in conjunction with, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to look, after you ride off into the sunset, I've got to deal with this guy, you know, as the athletic director. And if I don't get along with them, and if there's not a good relationship there, then that's not going to work. And at the end of the day, it's up to me, not you. Like, we can frame it any way you want. If we're all in agreement, like, I don't care, but once you leave, I'm the one that has to deal with this guy. So, or gal, I guess, as the case may be. But everybody has to be on the same page. This just can't be driven by the football coach themselves or the basketball coach or whatever coach it happens to be. Because I've definitely seen it backfire, you know, at lower levels.
Sure. In or out on socks with sandals? This is the easiest out that we'll probably ever have. That, like, is there a worse look than socks with sandals?
No.
No offense to anyone who does it. If you're doing it, you might want to reconsider that as a style statement, though.
I think the only place where I would even, like, somewhat allow the socks with the sandals is, like, after a sporting event, you take your cleats off and you throw the slides on.
Yeah.
And you still have your socks on.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like post-baseball game, because you got to get your spikes off and you don't want to put on just a pair of shoes, so you throw on the slides. Yeah, I can see that.
That's the only exception I have to the rule. Like, if you're
wearing like dad walking around on vacation with socks and sandals, sorry.
Hard pass. That's terrible. Absolutely awful. Don't do it.
Can't
way
go
out
that.
On that one. Yes.
No can do. Right. Burgers, brats, and dogs on the 4th of July instead of barbecue ribs, chicken, and steak.
Wow.
I mean, you can't go wrong with either. Really.
No. Now, one takes a lot more time and energy and money to make than the other.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I can tell you right now, on my grill yesterday, there were burgers, brats, and hot dogs. So I guess I've got to be in on this, because that's what I literally served at my house. you know.
I was actually originally in on grilling steaks yesterday, but my wife talked me into going out. So we went out. And
really?
Steak. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm cool with a good steak, but I wasn't buying steaks for everybody.
Considering the weather yesterday, the weather did suck. So I'm kind of glad that we went out.
It's a good point. By the time we ate, you know, we ate a little later on because normally we like to eat in the afternoon, but we didn't want people over at the house any longer than necessary. And so we pushed it so that it would be eating a little bit of downtime and then fireworks. You know what I mean? Because you got to wait for it to get dark. And because of stupid daylight savings time, you're not putting out fireworks until like 10 o'clock. So, which I have a huge problem with. That's a different conversation. So we ate later and the weather was okay.
Okay. Interesting one here on this next question from Irish English. As it currently stands, there is no actual trap game on the 2024 football schedule. We in or we out on that?
Oh, the whole trap game thing. I mean, that as it currently stands, that's the question, because we don't really know everything about all of these teams.
Yeah, and the broadness of trap game, by definition, a trap game is like a supposedly inferior opponent that comes between two pretty good opponents. Like, is that kind of how you would define it?
And that does not exist.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I'm looking at the schedule, maybe the only trap game is Stanford, because you got Louisville, Stanford, Georgia Tech.
Right.
And I'm not saying Georgia Tech is, you know, like, but again, like we've talked about the quarterback. I think he's an underrated quarterback, you know, with decent, you know, a lot of interceptions last year, but still a pretty, you know, I think I've said like Riley Leonard light, you know, kind of thing.
Sure.
I think that I would be in on this just because it's just kind of it's for the most part, you've got like a spike in the, you know, it's fairly flatline schedule, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, people are going to find their trap games for content purposes, but I love the way this schedule shakes out, to be perfectly honest with you. We kind of ranked the schedule on one of our afternoon shows a while back, and there were like four, basically there was like four tier, or no, I'm sorry, there were three tiers essentially. And so when I went through it and you had your quarters, you have three games in a quarter. Each quarter had somebody from the top, somebody from the middle, and somebody from the bottom. Like that's how it broke down. There was a one, a two, and a three in every single quarter. Like I kind of love the way this schedule breaks down, to be perfectly honest with you.
You know, so like, you know, could we, because like Joe is saying Georgia Tech could be the trap game. So do we define trap game the way I just said it, you know, where it literally fall, you know, an opponent that you probably should beat that maybe could trip you up that falls between two really good opponents, or is a trap game just simply a team that could be better than you're thinking they could be? You know, I don't know.
I mean, Georgia Tech is the one that most people are going to pick.
Yeah.
I get it, but Georgia Tech is going to be taking their lumps this season, and I don't know what's going to be left of Georgia Tech by the time
they could be a pulp by the time Notre Dame,
to be honest.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just don't see any team that kind of falls under that category. Cause you know, you can't really say Louisville because they of the revenge factor from the year before. You're not gonna say any of the MAC teams. Mm-hmm. Purdue's not a good football team. So I don't know how, I mean, maybe that's a trap game because they're just getting on a bus and heading down there. Like maybe they overlook them, I guess. Weirder things have happened at Ross-Ade Stadium. Just ask Ohio State, but I don't see this Purdue team even being that good. Stanford, no. I have a hard time seeing it. They're not going to look past any of these teams. So, again, famous last words.
You've got plenty of them, don't you?
Yes, I do.